Welcome to the Bourbon Syringe, the podcast whose only care is that you get better. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we just watched Season 3, Episode 1 of House of Cards.
Chapter 27.
Chapter 27. They are sticking with the chapter titles. Seeing that through to the end.
Okay, before we get started, I just want to talk about release schedule, because last year we just dropped them all in a single weekend, and that was a lot of fun and cool.
And we're doing it again!
record scratch. We found out that it really warped our traffic, because everyone listened to like the first one and the last one, mm-hmm. and then hardly anyone listened to the middle ones, and we think it's because it's just too much content at once.
Yeah, yeah.
Too much. It's like eating a 5-gallon tub of vanilla ice cream. It's just too much. So what we're doing is we're recording one. We're actually doing some mini marathons today and this weekend so we can get kind of like a build up. But we're going to release one today, Friday the 27th, the release day of the whole season. This upcoming Monday, we are going to release another episode, and also Wednesday and also Friday. Mm-hmm. And we're going to keep that Monday, Wednesday, Friday release schedule for the next 4 weeks. And then that should see us through to 13 episodes. We might do a wrap-up podcast. We might not, depending on how the season goes and depending on how much post-run feedback we get. Please help us out if you send us feedback to houseofcards@baldmove.com. Identify your comments for which chapter, which episode number it is, so we can kind of keep spoiler-free and also not miss any of your feedback, because it's going to be kind of crazy keeping all this stuff straight in the inbox.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the plan. We're going to... every other day, essentially, every other working day, you're going to get a little bit more House of Cards goodness.
It's going to be fun.
Yep.
I was kind of blown away in a lot of respects by this episode.
I was white knuckling this episode. I was thinking, man, they are really riding the edge of farce.
Yes, they are. And but I'm okay with that. Like, it's the last season. Let's just go balls to the wall.
Yeah. Like, it's Spacey pissing on his father's grave. Stamper coming back from the goddamn dead. Frank blowing up a orphanage full of children.
And Stamper shooting bourbon into his mouth. Having prostitutes shoot. Breaking his arm in catastrophic fashion and
holding together salad spoons.
Yeah. A lot of crazy shit happened this episode.
A lot of crazy shit happened.
Let's take it from the top. That scene where Frank pisses on his father's grave.
I loved it.
It was awesome, because if you didn't know who Frank Underwood is at this point, this tells you everything you need to know. Mm-hmm. The guys are like, he's honoring his father, for God's sake. Give him some privacy. And we know that he's not, and we see that he's not. Mm-hmm. It just shows you how disingenuous he is when it comes to everything.
And I love the conceit still of him talking directly to camera. He's like talking to his father, but then he brings us into it. It's like, this is the first time president's been to Gaffney. Can you believe that? And I don't know, there's also, like, if this turns out to be this gonzo of a season, there's something kind of striking about Frank coming out and literally pissing on his predecessors.
Okay.
Like, this could, like, if, you know, Seppenwall and Feinberg savaged this show on their podcast.
Huh.
They clearly hate it. It made me angry listening to their review, because I haven't seen season 3 yet.
Sure.
But just because they were analogizing things from season 2 that continued to bother me, and I thought a lot of the factual statements they made about season 2 for why they didn't like him had any basis in reality.
Okay.
You know, subjectively, you can say a lot of things like Frank's one note and this and that, but there's a lot of things they said about the history of the show that I'm like, well, you guys clearly didn't give a shit. So, you know, I don't know. Hmm. That's, like I said...
All right,
I might be guilty of that frequently on other shows. I'm just saying that I really was angry. And now, after seeing his first episode, the biggest problem I had was Stamper coming back. Once I accepted that, I didn't really have any other problems.
And they focus a lot on Stamper this episode. Mm-hmm. I would say this is predominantly his episode. From his recovery to him dealing with his pain and his medical issues.
And rejection from the White House.
Uh-huh.
Because let's talk about this. You know, Frank Underwood's only cares for you to get better. That's bullshit. They don't want Stamper back.
You're right.
The best case scenario is he takes care of Rachel for them and then gets hit by a bus.
Yep.
He's radioactive.
Which he'd probably survive. I don't know. Throw him in front of a subway car. He survived the brick.
Yep.
So I don't know what a subway does to that man.
Yep. Well, you know, Stamper's well-versed in dealing with bricks in political and non-political situations.
I guess so. But you're right. They don't want him back. That is my impression after seeing this first episode.
Why? Rachel's in the wind for 6 months.
Uh-huh.
Why?
What do you mean, why? Why did the show writers decide to do that?
Well, why did she beat Stamper with a brick, mm-hmm. but if she calls the cops, I mean, I don't know how afraid she is of Frank Underwood, but it seems like it's just as likely she calls the cops and said, this man would not let me, I was being unlawfully confined, he was going to hurt me, and then blow the lid wide open. But I know she doesn't know.
But he's the president. That's...
Yes. And he's done all this insane, crazy shit when he was not the president. Imagine
sure.
Once he gets to be the presidency. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Where is she? Is she actively hiding out? She's got to be, right?
Sure. I buy that. She is staying off the grid as much as possible.
How much of this story did the police buy?
Of what story?
Stamper's. I got carjacked, and then I ran the guy off.
I felt like they bought the whole thing.
Really?
They tried to kind of corner him, like, why were you in Maryland, that area of Maryland? And he was like, I like to drive. I drive. I think a lot. I drive.
I thought that they...
And then he changed the subject, and I liked that he did that.
I thought this was an instant cast. I mean, this is an instant cast, so I don't know. But I thought that they shared a significant kind of cop look, a cop-to-cop look. Like, this is bullshit, but we got nothing.
There's that possibility, yeah.
So, you know, obviously, I don't know. It's like I used to say, like, what's the primary vector for a Frank Underwood presidency going down in flames? And honestly, there's enough body trails here that...
Yeah. I mean, the news reporter angle.
Yeah.
The journalism angle, whatever. All of that stuff could bring him down. Even just a power struggle with someone who is better than him.
Plus, I mean, he's killed multiple people at this point.
Let's talk about that at the very end when he kills kills the terrorist, potentially kills a bunch of kids. This could become a huge problem for him going forward.
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially...
His approval rating is already in the shitter.
That was how kind of Homeland the season started out. So I thought it was interesting how it's another kind of drone controversy. Or at least, I guess didn't have to be a drone.
Yeah. I think that's significant. I think that is setting up a trajectory that is not good for him, or at least some adversity in accomplishing his goals.
Yeah.
They're really setting Stamper up as like a Frankenstein's monster sort of thing. You know, they come in and they say, look, you're going to be unpredictable emotionally. You're going to have motor skill issues.
They were inspired by Penny Dreadful last season.
Yep. When they put the bolts in his neck, I started thinking, there's some kind of allegory
here. Neck, he's going to be hiring a prostitute with car jumper with the jumper cables and a car battery. Spark them on my bolts. No, it's okay. They won't touch your nipples. Just spark them on my bolts. I was convinced that when they're coming up on the motorcade, presidential motorcade, that was Stamper's funeral. Do you think the show creators?
Yeah, they did.
Which, by the way, this was written by Bo Wilmont, executive producer, writer of the show. It was directed by John David Coles, also executive producer and director of five episodes of House of Cards previously. And tons
I think
of other stuff
at some point, everybody gets to be an executive producer.
It's just, yeah.
They just like
it's a Netflix thing. They pay you $0.05, but you get to be an executive producer.
Sure.
And all the ribs you can eat.
Yeah. They're creating the next generation of great artists.
Do you think that they thought Stamper was dead? Because we conclusively thought Stamper was dead last year. And I think that shot of him like greenish gray laying in the dirt, like from night to morning.
Yeah. No, I was shocked to find out that he was alive.
Do you think that they just got in the writer's room and were trying to do plots and stuff, and they're like, oh shit, we need Stamper?
I don't feel like they needed Stamper.
Or do you think that if you held Bo Wilmont's feet to the fire, that he would say, no, we intended to leave it ambiguous about Stamper being dead?
I think that's probably what he would say.
I tell you what, he looked like a corpse, I thought.
Yeah, no, I...
And they did. I will say that they gave him realistic levels of trauma. Mm-hmm. Like, he was fucked up. And
yeah,
it took 6 months of recovery, and he's really not all the way there.
Sure. No, he is very far from all the way there.
One hot shower, and he's, boom, almost back hospitalized again.
And he's dosing himself, potentially, with, you know, HGH and Percocets. So
that was my question.
Viagra.
They show him shooting up with vials, and I thought that we were understood. You didn't get this, but I thought we were supposed to understand, and that was like HGH or steroids. That he's basically like an NFL player trying to get back on the field.
Yeah,
even if it's not necessarily good for his health.
Once you said that, so there are a couple scenes that make me think that's true. Because once you said that, I was like, interesting. So this guy desperately wants to get back to the White House.
Yep.
It would make a lot of sense for him to kind of go and covertly be trying to self-medicate. And then when he goes to the doctor for his broken arm and they give him Percocet, he's like, I can't have that. But he doesn't say that, and the doctor gives it to him. I felt like that was because he was mixing so many medications.
Oh.
And then he decided, you know what? I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to take these, and I'm going to try to get better faster.
Oh, I thought it was because he's an alcoholic.
There's also that. But he's not had trouble with narcotics before or any kind of pain pills or anything.
I don't know.
It's kind of a slippery slope.
I know he was an alcoholic, but I don't know whether he was involved in cocaine or... Maybe it's just like, I'm an addictive personality, so I don't want any of that stuff.
That could be
true. He did throw away the prescription for Percocet.
Yeah, yeah, he took the two pills.
So going forward, is he...
Now he's on the booze.
Is he going to be like, you know, Pete Russo, like calling to the hotel lobby, have the bellboy run out and get him Percocets?
I think so.
Give him some perks?
No, it seems like bourbon is the drug of choice in this episode, right? It's easily accessible. He's not going to get Percocets.
We were like, can you shoot alcohol? I'm sure you can shoot alcohol intravenously, but
probably.
Man, it doesn't seem like it'd be pleasant or wisely.
No.
Like, you know, the oral method works just fine.
Sure.
If you want to go hard, there's always rectal.
Yep.
But yep. Squirting this, why do you need the scary needle to squirt bourbon in your mouth?
That's some really weird kinky shit. Like, something is going on with him that is not just, I want to
also,
drink.
Also, I'm
going to
say a Washington, D.C. prostitute, that's probably not the top 10 weirdest thing she's been asked to do that month.
You're right. You're right.
She's like, you know, scary looking syringe. Oh, you just want me to squirt in your mouth? Okay. Okay. I thought you don't want me to jam it down your pee hole or something.
she probably thought he was going to shoot her up.
Yeah, that's something. I thought so, too. That's the other thing. It's like, is he just going to be murdering whores now? Is that... You know, he's turned into like some weird version of the Punisher.
Sure. He's Frankenstein going after the villagers. I don't know.
God.
Or vice versa.
I don't get it. That was a really creepy, creepy fetish scene.
I think that's what it was intended to do, is creep you out, and then they're going to fill it in later.
But I do like the HGH steroids because it feels like he is like, you know, an athletic star that's in his fate. It's fading. He's got a younger, more talented counterpart coming up behind him.
Seth.
Now he's got an injury. He's got to get back on the field, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Not, I feel like there are bad things ahead for him, especially as it works with Gavin, too. Like, Swordfish, as I'm going to call him.
Sure.
They have a meeting. Swordfish wants out of the FBI. We knew that from last season.
He never wanted in.
No. God, no. And Stamper wants him to find Rachel. So,
and Stamper doesn't really hold, because I'm a little fuzzy on all this, but I feel like that, you know, he made a lot of promises to this kid that he's been out cold for 6 months. How in the world have those things been taken care of? So
I got the
distinct impression that Gavin was like, the fuck, you've got nothing. But he did give him the fact that the FBI are not even aware that he's involved in the crime or know anything about Rachel. So that's something.
Yeah, it could have been more like, what the fuck, man? You've been out of the loop for a long time.
Yeah.
I'm dying over here. Help me.
Yeah, there was something to that.
Yeah. Let's talk more about Frank. We'll get to Claire here in a little bit. But Frank has a lot of adversity in front of him. He's got this jobs reform thing, this jobs program that he wants to push through. He needs $500 billion to do it, and he's having trouble with his group, his committee, trying to put this package together, finding that money.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be, in my opinion, one of the big driving forces in this season.
Sure.
For Frank. The other thing is, like we talked about earlier, with the terrorist that he's chasing, and kind of, you know, him in peace talks with the Middle East and all these things, those are also going to be revolving around each other. At least that's what I assume.
Sure.
After episode one, I think those are when you establish them. I noticed that Frank's demeanor is even like more kind of at your throat. Like in this committee meeting,
he's treating these senior White Hat or Capitol Hill people like they were the interns from season one.
Yes.
I'm going to lock you in a room and not let you out. And I'm the boss. And that is not how he got to where he's at.
No, no. He got to where he's at by doing the other thing he did, which is convincing the justice to stay on by using Blythe to...
Yeah,
to,
poor Donald.
Like he promised him a research center in order to convince this guy to stay on for another 6 months a year. That's brutal.
No, and he promised Donald the research center, yes, to get him to use his experience of losing his wife,
yeah,
to deprive the man.
That's what I said.
Of okay, of 6 months to a year of his remaining years of lucidity. This man has Alzheimer's.
Yeah,
which is worse than a death sentence. And he wants him to piss away another year in government politics?
Uh-huh.
Oh, Christ.
That's
Donald's
the part...
lost his soul, man.
Yeah. Donald, man.
Do you think
he's not the principled guy he was?
Or do you think there's going to be comeuppance for Frank? Or, I mean, I guess those aren't mutually exclusive, but do you think Donald's going to have some comeuppance for being kind of good guy, hapless, ineffectual, like a Dennis Kucinich model? Mm-hmm. Do you think he's going to have a comeuppance for making a deal with the literal devil?
Well, I think
not
so.
Literal devil.
Most people who make deals with Frank do not get their end of the bargain.
Hmm.
They may get something they're promised, but it ends up being twisted to Frank's end,
instead
of theirs.
Yeah.
So he may get this research center, but ultimately, I don't think he's going to be satisfied or fulfilled. With that,
I'm really curious moving forward to see kind of like a three-way battle between Seth, I think is the name, mm-hmm, of the new press secretary / fixer guy.
Yep.
But clash between him, Remy, and Stamper seems, yep, like are all brewing. And honestly, the other thing that you failed to mention as a problem that Frank is facing is his wife's ambition. We didn't talk,
yes,
about that.
Yes, we haven't got to her yet, but...
What more? Because were you surprised at the relative lack of Frank? I mean, we got him waltzed in, pissing on a stone. It was really conspicuous when they're doing that Stephen Colbert riff. The only time they cut to the TV is when Stephen was on. Uh-huh. We never got to see Frank Underwood on the set.
No, we do. We do.
Did we?
Yeah, several times.
They seriously...
You might have been taking notes or something, but yeah, a couple of times they cut to like a wide shot of both of them or a close-up of Frank.
It's funny because he was on several times. He was on the Colbert Report.
Kevin Spacey
as Frank Underwood.
Really?
I think he did.
They both did characters? That's kind of cool.
I don't know. I can just remember one skit where he showed up as Frank Underwood. He might have showed up as Kevin Spacey too.
Awesome.
Probably same. I bet they're wearing the same suit.
So, yes, I like that sequence with Colbert. I thought it was cool.
Well, it blows my theory that they were keeping him off the camera deliberately.
Sure.
I feel like an asshole now. Thanks.
Sorry. You know what I was surprised by with Frank is he did not spin this 74% thing where, like, 74% of the people say that doing things that are good that they don't want to do is a good thing.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he didn't spin that to saying, like, here are the things that need to be done. I don't personally want to do them. I don't like them, but they need to be done. Hmm. I'm surprised he didn't spin it that way. Instead, he spins it like, how does he spin that? I forget.
Basically that we've got, you know,
he was like,
we have to do things that people don't want us to do, but we've got people telling us that's what they want us to do. That, 3/4 of them will support us, so what the fuck? You know, and basically telling these, like, you motherfuckers' job isn't to tell me what the problems are. That your job is to do what I tell you to do, and then my job is to sell the American public and the Congress, which I actually was like, yes.
He's right.
Yes, that is a president's job. Yes, there is way too much of anticipatory hand-wringing and milquetoast bullshit in politics.
Sure. But knowing how low his opinion is of, or people's opinion of his is,
yeah, that's
I felt like he could have spun that into 74% of the people saying, okay, I like this guy better because he's doing things that he doesn't necessarily want to do, but are good.
Yeah. No, he needs a big win. And something tells me that it's too early to give him one in the form of that Abdul guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's going to be a low mark.
He's going to hit rock bottom. And I'm wondering what it is. I'm betting episode 3 or 4, unless this is just a death spiral, it seems like that he'll have a uptick of good luck and maybe a 4 or 5 episode where things are going good, run of where things are going good.
Mm-hmm.
But we see under the waters there's problems, and then, you know, you got a final, like, 5-episode stretch of him going down.
Yep.
Because we're both in agreement totally that this is the downfall of the House of Underwood.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I don't think, I would be kind of disappointed if Frank prevailed. Like, the message that sends is not one that I enjoy.
I don't know if like I said, depends on if he does a good job as president. Like, I think it would be somewhat entertaining, like I said, to see
a
very Machiavellian president succeed.
I just don't feel...
I have no problems with that.
Like, Frank Underwood is out for the best interest of the people. I feel like he is out for his own best interest, as he has been all along.
But that's the thing. Like, that's, I think, what Machiavelli... A lot of people don't understand Machiavelli.
I don't.
Machiavelli's not just, like, straight-up evil, selfish, whatever. It's about how to wield power effectively. Mm. And... you know, if you're consumed with their legacy, it sometimes makes a lot of sense to solve people's problems and become a great man, not because of any altruistic purpose, but because you have to be effective and
you want people to remember you.
You have to history to remember you kindly.
Mm-hmm.
So to some extent, if you want that, you have to do a good job. So, you know, sometimes the do-gooders can be the worst because... you know, they're going to blindly follow in their Partesian plan, regardless of whether it's effective or not, because they're more obsessed with that than their legacy.
All right.
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I just... sure. I suppose that could be the direction it's going. Why don't we talk about Claire?
Let's talk about Claire.
All right. Because Claire in this episode has her sights firmly set on the UN and is pushing in multiple directions for that. She's pushing people to nominate her. She's pushing Frank to announce the nomination.
And Frank's trying to hold her down.
For what I see as legitimate reasons. You know, he's got a lot on his plate. He doesn't want to upset the cart right now.
But we've seen her take a back seat for 2 seasons now.
Yes.
And increasingly growing restless with it.
They both have very strong points. And I think in the end, Claire is going to get her way here.
Do you think that that part of the... okay, so part of the downfall of the House of Underwood...
mm-hmm.
Do you think it's possible that Claire will that Frank will somehow undermine her? Because he tried to by showing her the orphanage explosion.
Sure.
The great orphanage explosion of 2014. and she's like, no, fuck them kids. Like, oh, I won this job before I knew I could murder children from orbit. Now that I can do that.
are there children in there? Yes. Sir, it's a school bus. I think there are children in there.
Can we wait until more school buses? Is school letting out?
Just one. How disappointing.
So she's fine with that. Do you think that he'll try to do some other things to get her to back down? Because he...
yeah, yeah. He might arrange for this announcement when she wants it, and then work behind the scenes to come up with a reason to cancel it. Like, she only gave him a weak timeline,
that she will realize in retrospect was a manipulation.
It could be, and then she works against him, and it all just comes crumbling down. House of cards, baby. House of cards.
Does Claire and Frank stay together to the end, or is one of the plots in the season going to be some outside force splitting her off from him, leaving him vulnerable?
Bold prediction: they do not survive this series together. Their marriage is broken up by the end of it.
Interesting. So there is a betrayal.
I think they sowed the seeds for that last season.
Sure.
And with the stakes even higher and her seeing her not just wanting to be Frank's wife, and that has kind of always been her thing. I can't see her.
Oh, she's always been more than Frank's wife. Lover of Meacham.
True, true. And she runs foundations. I get it, but you know, her concerns have always taken a back seat to Frank's. Mm-hmm. And we see her getting fed up with that right away here.
Oh, and I tell you what, when they're having that tit for tat, and she's like, you know, I'm almost 50. I've been waiting for forever. And oh, by the way, you might not even win. I was like, world star. I wanted to upload that to fucking world star. That was some street fighting.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. It's real good.
So, and I can't tell. It's like, you know, last year I think I decided that their relationship is a very weird one, but they love each other.
Yeah.
Starting to see some cracks forming there because
I agree.
His love is bumping up against his ambition. Mm-hmm. And
both of theirs are, honestly. Yes.
Yeah. But I'm saying that Claire has got by far, like, it's not just her ambition. He has made her promises that he is wanting to welch on. She was accurate in saying that.
Yeah.
So, like, there's ambition and then there's, like selfish ambition.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I feel like that I'm behind Claire. I'm in Claire's corner.
Yeah, me too.
When it comes to that, because I just think that he's gone overboard. They're both ambitious,
he's got
sure,
the presidency.
But she
come
has
on,
made
man.
A lot of sacrifices to yeah. get him there, and he is not wanting to pay the piper.
For sure. I think that's all I have to talk about. Although, I got to say, Old Darby bourbon is not a real thing.
Well, I can't imagine that a bourbon company would be excited about having their product used in that way.
Sure.
Hey, yeah. You want? Oh, a House of Cards? Yeah, I've seen that on the Emmys. What's a pitch it? It's a bunch of young, sexy people having fun. Is it a powerful man making
kind of,
powerful
yeah.
decisions as he sips from a classy snow? Yeah,
well, it is a powerful man making a decision. Yes.
Sure. Sure. Well, where can we sign us up?
Yeah, so I'm fairly happy with this first episode. It is a little gonzo.
Yeah,
but I'm okay with that.
It's weird because I feel like that they've got two paths here. They can get more gonzo, or they can back it off a bit. They can't keep this level of gonzo up.
You're right.
Like that this will get to be too much. So they either need to just keep upping the odds and go for broke on the preposterousness of it and the entertainment value, or they need to really kind of like, this reminds me a lot of season one or season two,
Zoe.
Episode one.
Yep.
Throw Zoe in front of the train and you're like, what exactly. the fuck? There's no way they can keep doing this shit. They just killed Pete like two episodes ago. And they did. They pulled it back.
Yeah.
They gave us some gerbils and some cyber terrorist shit that we didn't care about. But you know, they brought it back a little bit.
Yeah. You're right. I don't think they can keep this pace up. I don't want them to keep this pace up, frankly. I would like to see a lot more of those political machinations that we saw in seasons one and two, and I think they're going there.
You think it'd be fun if, like, at the end of the third episode, we actually pull up Seppenwall and Feinberg's podcast and either agree or rebut them point by point?
I don't know. I don't know. Is
the
our
look
audience
in your eyes
listening?
Says no.
Yeah, yeah. I just shot up bourbon with a syringe, so
okay.
I don't think I want to do that.
All right. Plus, they might be right. They might be right. If it
Maybe.
Keeps up
we'll
this
see.
Level of ridiculousness. I got some feedback.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Let's do that.
Michael McBride from Virginia says, just got finished watching the first episode, and I have to say was surprised on two fronts that kind of converge. One, the sheer fact that Stamper's even alive, and two, that most of the episode focused on him. But I'm not complaining. Just wondering what you all thought of the fact that we got to see so little of Frank and so much of Doug. Happy season three, guys. Happy season three, Michael.
Yeah, I'm excited for this season.
I was surprised, sure.
Yeah, definitely. But I'm confident that we will see more Frank Underwood.
How many episodes of Doug-centric can we have before you start to get testy? Next, like, do you if they wanted to, like, if this is a Slab Town arc,
okay,
how many episodes of Doug Town can we get?
I will give them one more.
This would be Shot Town, I guess. It's the shots right into the mouth.
I will give them one more episode of Doug Focus.
So two episodes. So you
and trailing off Doug after that.
Okay.
Like, I don't want three and four to be Doug focused.
Because 30 minutes of this episode is Doug. If next episode 30 minutes is Doug, then you're going to get testy in episode three if they open up with a long,
yeah,
cold Doug open.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's it. We have more feedback,
don't we? Liz G said, spoiler, Stamper is alive. I had hoped that he would be, but I knew it was unlikely. No shit. They said that they spent way too much time on him in the first episode. Or that said they spent way too much time on him in the first episode. I want more of Frank. She felt this episode is a little underwhelming. She thought that there was an order that was followed. The president steps down and the vice president becomes president. The Speaker of the House becomes vice president. I didn't think the guy who Frank had as vice president was the Speaker of the House, was he? I remember that he was the guy locked up in the office with Frank. That's all the
same guy.
I don't know the answer to that question.
I don't know who becomes vice president when the president is impeached. I know who becomes president, obviously.
Yeah.
We're looking it up. The gears are turning here at the Bald Move headquarters.
Yeah, you might have to edit this if I can't find it quickly.
Frank Underwood becomes vice president.
Man, there's no straight answer. It's all a bunch of bullshit. I tell you what.
It's politics.
I tell you what. We will open up the next episode with an answer or whether, in fact, we can't find it.
Fucking politics.
Fucking politics. I would guess, because they've been fairly impeccable about the rules of order and all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That's a pretty big plot hole if they fucked up that detail.
I'm sure they didn't. Sure they didn't.
But, you know, I'm not 100% confident. We'll find an answer before the next episode. Let's see. I'm also glad that Remy has a place in Frank's team. It was good seeing him, even though he didn't have much to do. He got to fire a guy. Yep.
Yep.
And I'm really looking forward to that. This power struggle between his staff. What did you guys think of the episode? Do you ever drink your booze through a stringe? What was that all about?
I told Aaron if we were going to do this on camera that we needed to have syringes with booze in them.
And I said, I'll only do that if he squirts the booze in my mouth.
And I said, no.
And I said, we all have our limits. So this is a pertinent question. How are you going to do the podcast? One at a time, two or three at a time? I don't know if we opened up the cast talking about this, but
we didn't.
It's a good time to talk about it. In fact, we might want to go and re-record an intro. But just to recap, we are going to release an episode today, which is Friday the 27th. This upcoming Monday, we're going to release an episode. And also on Wednesday, episode 3, episode 4 will drop on Friday. And then we'll do that Monday, Wednesday, Friday schedule for the next 4 weeks until the season's complete. And then we may have a wrap-up podcast. We may not, depending on how the season goes and how the feedback goes.
Sure.
But we're going to be recording these in kind of like mini marathons. Like, we're going to knock off 4 this weekend, and we're going to do 2 more the following week, and then we're going to kind of do it in the off-season since we've got a pretty full schedule otherwise.
Yeah.
But we're going to fit it in the weekends and the evenings of the Bald Move time. But we're hoping that that gives enough time for people to get some feedback into us and to have some reactions and to avoid kind of what we had last year where we talked about on the wrap-up cast, we had this kind of weird upside-down parabola where tons of people listened to the first episode and tons of people listened to the last, but since they all dropped in a single weekend, like, that's just too much content for people to chew through.
Yeah.
So this is a little bit more paced, and people are going to get in front of us, get ahead of us. And please, if you're giving feedback, you can do so at houseofcards@baldmove.com. But please, if you can, put something in the subject identifying what chapter it's for, or what episode it's for, so we can keep it straight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we can avoid spoilers as much as possible because that's our goal.
Sure. All right. That's it. Thanks everybody for listening. We will have another podcast on Monday. Until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.